Culture eats strategy for lunch, and informed cultures drive decisions and inspire action. At the Data Culture Podcast, we talk with execs, visionaries, and data experts so that you may move from idea to outcome in your own data culture journey. Welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. My name is Sid Atkinson, data culture innovator and consulting leader with over 21 years in data. And with us today is Shilpi Sharma. Shilpi is a seasoned professional with experiences spanning 4 countries and 3 continents. She embodies adaptability, authenticity, and a passion for fostering growth-oriented environments in an ever-changing market. She has over 22 years of cross-industry experience, and she's a vanguard in digital and cloud transformation, championing innovation and strategic planning to steer enterprises through waves of globalization and technology disruption. She is here to share her journey and her insights with digital transformations that she has led at both EY and Microsoft. Shilpi, welcome. It's awesome to have you on today.
Thank you so much, Sid. I am extremely excited about our session today. Delving into digital transformation, delving into the current market, and super excited to talk with you, discuss this topic, as well as reach out to the audience that listens to us.
Awesome. And then to frame this discussion up, it's okay. Everybody's been talking about digital transformation for decade plus, right? We can make the mistake in assuming that just because this is a now dated term that everybody knows what it is and why we should still be talking about it. So what is digital transformation to you? And how might you define this for folks?
God, this was to your point about 10 plus years ago. The first digital transformation that I did was an agile transformation. And I did a couple of those in different companies. The typical approach was bring in Agile, change all the typical principles of Agile, bring it to the team, train them, adopt it, and run the program accordingly. Did all of that, but there was no association with, well, why are we doing this? Why are we bringing Agile? There was no vision, business objective, and how that was the reason why we were bringing Agile. What did Agile bring to the table? And I know in the last 10 years especially, this term digital transformation has started expanding its boundaries to not just include technology, but it also has started to take into account and from the lens of what is the vision of where we are going, why are we doing this, and then it takes it to the next step as to what are the business objectives. Are you taking a product to market soon? Are you building on operational efficiency? Are you focused on customer experience, right? Based on these objectives, then you define, okay, what is the strategy that you want to implement to help make the transformation to meet those goals and meet those objectives? I typically, when I look at it, I look at it from the lens of people, process, technology, data, and risk and compliance, security, right? That's become a big, big thing recently. And with that lens, when I'm looking at digital transformation, because all of those areas get impacted when you're transforming. So I think bringing it back, the definition now is much broader. It is not technology, it is business processes, it's data, it's people, it's culture, it's security. It's a little bit of everything, but going back again to the vision, to the business objective.
Now, as folks who listen to this podcast know, I'm a big fan of start with why, make clear on the objectives, because there's so many ways to be busy and so many ways to do things. You should understand why and align to why those things need to happen. I remember in 2011 when we were first talking about digital transformation consulting, and I just still couldn't get it out of my head. The joke I kept making was like, is this just rebranding the transformation that those who are stuck in the past need to do? The digital dinosaurs, like the folks that haven't seen the technology age coming, is this just a polite way of saying, get off your duff and let's go do something?
I have definitely seen that cultural mindset, but unfortunately, Sid, it's not 10 years ago.
It's still today.
So many, I hate saying this, but leaders who still have that mindset. If it's working for us, why do we need to adopt the new technologies? And I know there are firms who are, going back to my agile example, 11, 12 years ago, are currently doing an agile transformation. So they are basically a decade behind with a lot of firms. So you can imagine the competitive edge that they've had to cover and going to be seeing some of those efficiencies a lot later in the market, which of course impacts the people they attract, the revenue that they bring, and the business objective that they are driving.
Yeah. Or I think we're going to see agile transformations for the next 20 years still, because mostly And it's not because I think there's loads of wonderful agile practitioners out there and loads and just reams and reams of ideas on how to do it and all sorts of flavors of agile, big questions around scaled agile frameworks. But I think all of them, the reason to me, I see so many people retransforming on agile is back to your first point, is that if I'm not clear on the objectives on what and why does my company exist to do things, then I'm going to forget. Yeah. On a related note to your thing, I used to use this as a talking point in transformations. So made fun of transformation, digital transformation is a term, then talked a lot about it. But for a while there, John Deere, the tractor people, actually had more job postings for software engineering and software roles than for anything else. So when you talk about, I think it was the World Economic Forum quote, like software is eating the world from like 2012, 2013, and now fast forward to like, everybody's got to figure this out. And then in the previous podcast, the podcast I just published not too long ago, we talking with Holly Smith on Databricks, is now we're going to have AI eating the world, right? So moving away from just interfaces and people like picking up a tablet or something to interact with software to now we can have very intelligent interactions, potentially interfaceless interactions, right? But
I agree. Technology disruption is definitely a lot bigger problem with AI in the picture. It's similar to when we had big disruptions. The cloud was big too. Internet was big, humongous. And you know, I think an AI has a different flavor to it because it's using personalized data. It is in the hands of folks like you and I, right? Mm-hmm. People sitting at home. My teenagers use generative AI in a lot of the work that they do, whether it's research. Google, I think, is for them, is not something that they use even for basic research. They're using ChatGPT and it's on their phone. So technology disruption. So let me take a step back, right? Technology disruption. The pace of technology disruption, the depth of technology disruption, and the fact that it's not just with these big companies anymore, it is with at every level, public is using it. All of that, coupled with the amount of data that we have collected and leveraging that data to make insights, to make better products, better services, and personalizing how we service the customer, I think all of that together is making us dive into relooking at what do we need to transform? How do we need to get ahead? How do we need to stay competitive? How do we need to deal with economic downturns or, you know, what we had with the pandemic? The overall global economy paused for quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And the progression in technology definitely helped bridge some of those gaps. But I think it gave us a wake-up call that we do need to get ahead to ensure long-term success and longevity, basically.
I love how you said that when you said, so you were trying to talk a little bit now about like disruptions that are coming in the market and impacting the need for digital transformation. But you mentioned both pace and depth, right? Because it's very similar in some ways, things that we have going on. You know, security professionals will tell you a lot about BYOD and the impact, just not the pace, but also how deeply that impacted the security posture of organizations, right? Now everybody wants to bring their iPhone and their iPad to work and have it connect. And oh my God, security infrastructure was not ready for that. And it's been adapting very quickly and very rapidly to that. So that hits, that's a nice analog to what you just mentioned, pace and depth, like hitting so much. So in your mind, what are some of those things, those disruptions, both technological or societal that are coming that really underscore the need for folks to think and measure, because this is the Data Culture Podcast, and measure so that quick side note, side jaunt here, that was also the thing I saw fail so much about any transformation is when you're not clear on the objective, you don't know how to measure to it the change that you're doing. You're doing change. You have to be, you're doing a whole bunch of things that are the hypothesis towards the change. And if you forget to measure.
I completely agree with you. I think without objective, without defining what your success metrics are, what your KPIs are, I think that's one of the big reasons why there are so many failures in digital transformation, because there is no way to, I don't want to say there's no way to measure. There is a way to measure it, but they're not defined early on, right? And with that in mind, before they can say, okay, this was a success, or this is something that we need to improve, and so on and so forth. So I 100% agree with you, and we'll definitely hit that again later in the conversation. But going back to your point regarding disruptions, right? So I mentioned the whole technology advancements and the disruptions that it's causing in our society and our economy. I think the other thing is, and this has become more prevalent since the pandemic, is the uncertainty of the market, right? The world is much more globalized, which means that we are interdependent, codependent on other economies to also be running at the same pace as we are, right? And if you see the impact of the pandemic and some of the other downturns, the overall growth has slowed down. In the last couple of years, the growth was barely 2%. And there's a projection. I was listening to the IMF, World Economic Outlook, and their projections for next year. So this year, the growth projection is at 3.3%, and next year is going to be at 3.4%. So it's basically a 1% increase, right? Typically, for a healthy economy, usually the growth is supposed to be about 2 to 3%, and we're only at 1%. What does that mean? The growth impacts, GDP impacts the income of the people, what they're buying, how we are able to create jobs, generate income, so on and so forth. Now, this is also made up of two pretty big things that we can hear it all in the news nowadays, right? Is inflation and interest rates. Inflation, most couple of years, it was at anywhere from 5 to 8% last 2 years, right? It has gone down recently. I think the numbers are at 2.8% and it's supposed to go down to 2.4%, right? What does that mean? Inflation basically is a purchasing power that the economy has, right? So people like me can go out shopping. We can go out to eat. We can go out for vacations, which is basically what runs the economy, right? The interest rates, on the other hand, are still fairly high with no projections for it to go down. What does that mean? That basically is the banks are having a hard time borrowing money, or businesses are not borrowing money to invest into the economy, which basically slows down the economy. Taking a step back, what does this all mean in relation to digital transformation, right? Your global economy is slower, and we are a first world country compared to some of the developing countries, which their growth is even slower. And because there is a codependency, you tend to realize that we do need to make our internal businesses much more efficient. We do need to be more nimble so that we can withstand these economic times. So I think it is imperative connecting the dots with the way the market is currently, as well as the technological advances that we are having. It is imperative that companies start looking at their businesses and transforming them to be more nimble, to be more long-term, to handle these types of ups and downs, because we all know this is not going to be the only economic downturn that we're going to have. And hopefully not, but potentially not the only pandemic either. I think bringing it back, these disruptions is what's perpetuating some companies to invest in digital transformation. And some companies that are not doing it, I would basically say that you guys should look at.
Yeah. Or it was nice knowing you.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a competitive market. You're right. If you're not on it, then you're to your point, it doesn't exist anymore.
It's the old adage, which is rather brutal but true: change or die. And that is
exactly
going to unfortunately stay true for a long time. And it's to come back to probably my more youthful critique of digital transformation and one way I've come to look at it, and I'll tie this to your disruptions piece and the broader view that you're really challenging folks to take on, looking at the broader market, looking at both the trends and disruptions in there. But to me, one way to look at digital transformation is that was an easier entry point for folks to understand. So it's a tactical thing. I've got digital infrastructure. Let me take about now realizing that software is eating the world, AI is eating the world, and that I need to infuse and make this a core competency in my business because it's required. Because if you look at companies that had better practices of continuous innovation at their core, right? Going back over 100 years, like some of those, the original in search of excellence idea, that like companies that are successful were more akin to biological organisms than they were to structured plans. So companies that constantly evolved didn't need to be told to go do digital transformation. So digital transformation in some ways to me is now like, it is the easy talk track to figuring out how maybe I should have actually had a continuous innovation plan from the beginning and for everything, not just my digital infrastructure. So
I 100% agree with you, Sid. And I think I will use the word culture to enhance what you just said. I think that some companies have built in their foundation and the culture to innovate, the culture to take risks, the culture to expand and grow. And I think that's imperative, and not just imperative for growth and sustainability, but it's not just a buzzword, which I think companies are adopting because it's the next checklist item to do.
Yeah. And I think I like how you mention, when you think about what are those disruptions, not just technology, right? Because I think we're all looking at AI as the disruption, lots of hype, but also lots of very real and impactful opportunities for people to add and change their business, right? Some of this stuff, some of the different techs and things that are out there can be applied in incredibly meaningful ways that people just haven't gotten the chance to do that yet. But I'd love how when you talked about disruptions, it's both technological and market-driven. Because one of the other things, when you take this broader view that you're suggesting to folks, and we look at just, for example, everybody's talking about, demographers are bemoaning birth rates, for example. Birth rates around the globe is like, hey, have we actually hit peak population in the world? It's a weird thing to think about, because we've always looked at population as this thing that's ever-growing and going up and to the right. And then, but what if we have hit that? That the U.S. is like the third most populous country today, a generation from now, I always get it backwards, is it Nigeria? I think Nigeria is about to eclipse us, or is it on pace to eclipse us? But that frameworks and foundations that we lay today can help us for these shortages that we might be facing. So people are afraid of AI taking the jobs, but saying, gosh, if we don't do something, we may not have enough people to do the work, so we better automate the heck out of things.
I 100% agree with you, Sid. And I think when you take a look at, to your point, technology, you cannot look at it in isolation. The economy is an ecosystem of businesses, people, the social aspects, policies that you're bringing in, long-term policies that you're bringing in and putting into place. There's so many aspects that make up this ecosystem for it to run well. And I think if you take away, to your point, if there is not enough workers 30 years down the road, what happens to these businesses? Who runs them? Mm-hmm. And yes, we can bring these technologies and train them to ensure that they run more nimble with a smaller population. But then there's a dependency on the education system. There's a dependency on the upskilling of people who are already doing the jobs, right? There's so many other foundational dependencies that need to be also brought along or aligned for that bigger picture, what happens in the 30 years time frame. Yes, I love this conversation. And sometimes you can get lost in it because it is an ecosystem conversation. It is not an isolation.
It is on the disruptions that I think people will seek to build and do. I'm going to make one small plug for anybody listening, because I love the meme that's been going around LinkedIn recently. It's like, I want people to look at AI to take care of doing my laundry and my chores so that I can do my art and my creative writing. I don't want AI to do my art and creative writing. But so it was a very interesting point in that when we think about how we might solve things for the human condition, right? Why are we taking away the things that are expressive about us versus solving the mundane? So anyway, small plug for somebody to go create like a very intelligent dishwasher. So.
Agreed.
Because according to my kids, that's all I do is always in the kitchen washing dishes. So if you ask them, wait, where's dad when he's not in his office? He's washing dishes. That's what he's doing.
I think you and I both. Either the dishes or the laundry or the cooking too.
Yeah, I am a stickler for a clean kitchen. Like it's the one room in the house. No, you cannot put your crap on the counter. It's got to be clean in here. So no, not allowed. So we've talked about what is digital transformation. So nice framing for it. And then Shilpi, I love the pace and depth that you talked about and the disruptions that are coming. And so why should people still be looking to build, even if you haven't built your digital transformation, this is a good reason. It's like, hey, or I'm in the middle of one, let me go reframe and make sure it's going well. Let me reframe and make sure I've got my clear objectives. And as a data person, measuring against those objectives, both high level, but also traction metrics. So progress towards the goals as well as the goals. So what are some of those roadblocks? What are common roadblocks in transformations?
I'm going to just name a couple of them, but then I'm going to actually get into a few of them a little bit more. We have if there is not a clear strategy or a vision defined, if there is not, the culture is not in the right manner, if there's not enough communication happening, so on and so forth. But let me get into the things that I feel strongly about, and I think these are things that has become more prevalent in today's economic condition.
Mm-hmm.
The roadblocks, one of them is a I think the business model, the way I look at it, mm-hmm. is we have product firms and we have professional services firms, right? And most of them, they have, with my example, right? I worked at Microsoft and I worked at EY, right? And I was a consultant before, as an industry person before. And we, in all my experiences, the companies I've worked for, extremely good at the products that they were building out. Widespread, great functionality, great features, so on and so forth, right? Same thing with professional services. They knew the domain well enough. They were excellent and in helping out their end customer in whatever objective that they were targeting. What I have realized in today's market, because of the target audience becoming more mature in what they want, and this has come through the whole technology advancements, right? They have more analytical insights into what they want. They want things more personalized. So the combination of product and the combination of services needs to happen more. It needs to gel more. Right? When I was with Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
had amazing product, right? But I think the transition into looking at a product and saying, okay, here is what I'm selling you. Here's your license. I'm going to come back next year and I'm going to renew this, right? It's no longer that market anymore. The customer is expecting you to say, okay, I'm taking this product. Now, how do I fit this into my tech stack? How do I upskill my employees to adapt and use the full set of features and functionality that I have bought? How do I build an operating model to sustain this technology? How do I govern this? How do I set up a support system around it? So on and so that, so forth, right? And the expectation from these firms is that you need to bring all of that together. And same thing with the professional services firm. You are no longer just using Excel, and I hate using the word access because I think you can't just use an Excel.
Excel just aid access.
You are expected to, yes, bring the professional services and the advisory aspect of things, but you need to couple that with technologies either you buy or build that help you get to the nuances of better service, but better advisory. So I think that business model, if it's not adopted, that's basically leaving money on the table for these firms. So this can be a roadblock if they're not thinking long term.
I like that. If I may add one little thing to, because in framing it that way, there's an alignment problem, or it's not going to say a problem, but there's an alignment that we can talk about that I think everybody knows, but also let's just state it bluntly, right? In change, like in looking for digital transformation, doing change to you're talking about the business model, the customer needs to do something. So they're looking at the product vendors, like tool sets that might enable the change, professional services, knowledge on going through the change, and then probably implementing some of those tool sets well. But in the change, the customer's goal, if you're a for-profit company, is to make more money, or on the money I'm making, make it more efficiently, i.e. so net margin goes up. But basic goals. But for the product company, it's to sell more product. And for the professional services companies, to sell more services. Now, usually people are good and are not going to, usually, good and not try to push too much on the customer. But we have to make sure it's like that alignment on what everybody's trying to do, it can overlap, but it's never aligned. And so the customer, back to your first point, if you don't know why you're doing the change, you can't make sure you're getting the best out of those other two groups.
Agreed, 100% said. And I think that there is awareness from the companies that I've worked at, as well as other firms that I've spoken to. There is awareness of this overall package to be brought to the forefront, mm-hmm. right? More seamlessly. It's not like they don't have those services. Microsoft has excellent products, but they also have a great consulting group. But I think bringing it together more seamlessly is what they are trying to package. And I think that's where the digital transformation needs to come in, through methodologies, through processes, internal processes, through better communication, so on and so forth, so that when you're going in front of the customer, it's one Microsoft or one EY and whatever, right?
Yep.
And yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, keep going, sorry.
The first thing that I would say is, from a roadblock perspective, is internally, mm-hmm. right? if you can take away, so typically digital transformation comes from top down, right? Everybody on the top, very aligned. They're embracing it. It's a well thought out, embraced strategy. However, when you come down to mid management, times they are not aligned to what it is that they're expected to do. And they could be aligned with pieces of it, but not the whole thing. And each BU, business unit, group could have separate objectives that need to be modified, that need to be customized, so to speak, to that bigger vision. And I think that their buy-in sometimes, or the lack of buy-in, I should say, hinders the progression of true adoption of the digital transformation that's happening, right? And the way you are, your performance management aspect also, right? If you're not measured with the lens of the changes that are coming in, but you're measured with the same old ways of doing things, then with you progressing, you are not going, if you don't get a good performance review based on the transformation, you're not going to adopt it. You're not going to embrace it. You're going to be like, I'm being punished for it, so I'm going to stick to what has always been there. So there, I think the cultural expansion and the embracing of the broader vision needs to happen at all levels. Blocks to go away. And it needs to be via the leadership. It needs to be through consistent communication. It needs to be through change performance reviews. It needs to be through enhancing the current systems, methods, structures, whatever that you may have. All of that needs to be also addressed at all levels of the firm.
Yeah, it's back to, in many ways, also the business model too, right? So it's like that alignment, because, and I've seen this over and over again, as you have in companies, is that you go top level looks, they actually typically have clear alignment on what their performance payouts and how they'll be judged.
Yes.
But does that cascade down? Because most people are, as you said, like, it is punitive to actually be innovative and fail. Whereas like innovation is frequently going to fail. And the key thing is, what did I learn out of it so I can pivot? It's not the 9 times that I was unsuccessful, it's the 10th time that I was successful that usually makes the change and makes it the better. So, but if I punish on the third for the first 3 tries, I'm never going to get to the 10th try because people are going to stop.
Yeah. I love what you just said, Sid. I think that the culture of innovation requires the ability to take risks. And risks in a lot of firms, unfortunately, is not welcomed. And then hence the reason for the astronomical failure rates that we have with digital transformation. And there are billions lost when firms are advancing at digital transformation, but these kind of blockers, the cultural risk averseness creates those. And unfortunately, a lot of times you don't realize it until it's pretty late.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things that we talk a lot with customers about. And again, the data nerd here, but I also think that the more you have access to information, the more you can make an informed and responsible decisions is what we talk a lot about. I am of the feeling that part of the challenge here is that lack of ability to measure the changes I'm pursuing consistently. Let me say it this way. The lack of ability to consistently measure the changes I'm pursuing and look at the market basket of all these different innovations. And it's like, how am I actually doing on my innovation process, not just the innovations? And now, do I have this the right basket of innovations I'm pursuing, both things with a small I, so it's lower risk and like failure, but bigger ones that could produce step function gains for the business, which are going to have higher risk of failure. Do I have the right balance of those? How am I pursuing those? Am I enabling people to pursue those? So data to me is like at the center of a lot of these things. And so what I have seen a lot of customers struggle with is getting the data to do and adapt and do a new and different things. Because I might have like my regular core BU performance reports and things like that, which is going to just continue to tell me how I operate today. It's not going to tell me how I need to operate tomorrow. It's not going to tell me how I can use the information to change things.
I agree.
And know me, I'm always going to bring it back to data.
No, and I think that is key, right? Like, how do you measure your success, or if you're moving in the right direction, or if you need to pivot? The market is changing. Day to day, you're having to re-examine the market, re-examine your competitors, the value chain you exist in, and if any of that gets impacted, you get impacted. So you need to pivot when it's necessary, and you can't pivot until you have an insight into your point, the data points, right, as to if we're moving in the right direction. I'll give an example of what I, with Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. One of the the leading digital transformation for financial services that I was doing in there, right? One of the things that I needed to measure was through the people, process, tech, and data lens, right? I was measuring transparency. I was measuring efficiency, right? Those were my business objectives. And the data point started with, and I'll give an example of a use case that I tracked. We did a monthly report, and it was done, created by a couple of directors at Microsoft for our client at the executive level. It took two directors about 2.5 weeks, about 4 to 5 hours with each person to diving into different systems, bringing the data together and creating a report. If you take the dollar amount at a director level of what it took to create that one report, which is monthly, by the way, that one report, which was about $4,200. When I started collecting the data, I was like, this time and money, I need to decrease, actually. When I put in the digital transformation for that particular use case, it was basically automating, collecting the data in one place and running reports that were automated that could be sent directly to the customer with the stamp of the two directors that I was speaking of. And it decreased our time by two hours from that time frame. And the only reason I'm saying is 2 hours is because it required data input from various people. The going back to the point, right? How would you, if you do not measure, if you do not know that $4,200 report is now costing me $150, that's a market improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you see the efficiency gains, the dollar gains, I think it gives more encouragement for leadership as well as the folks working on it to keep going ahead and to keep driving the digital transformation and cascading down to other areas as well. So I think it is, yes, essential to track that data. It is, yes, celebrate those wins. And I think it also helps propel the energy into more changes.
And the other side of that too is that you measured the financial impact, but we see these same things with a lot of our customers, and actually talking with one right now, is that they have an unmeasured quality problem because those things are all manual. So do you know on that, was like all the data accurate? It was probably reasonably accurate, but I guarantee you with that many manual steps, there were probably errors, probably restatements. Now, it might not have been of like a huge consequence, but there's certainly many scenarios where those things can be of major consequence, right? We've seen this like financial services, like the somebody enters the wrong, what was it? Somebody at Citi, I'll edit that part out. Somebody at a large financial services institution, and this is not just once, but this has actually happened multiple times. Was it the 2001 of the flash crashes was because of somebody adding an extra zero. And the same thing happened again, like several years later, same thing happened again. Right. So there's like flash crashes and another major sell-offs because people can't input data correctly. So, yeah.
You're right. 100%. How do you measure quality? And I think I will add one more thing. How do you measure the time saved?
Yep.
You put the time that this director that I was speaking of or two, right, this people, now that they have that extra 8 hours or 10 hours, where are they putting their energies?
Mm-hmm.
Are they bringing in more revenue? Are they bringing in more time for their employees, so on and so forth. So I think to your point, the qualifiable measures are also very key to, I think, count your success with these transformations.
Yeah, it's like in economics terms, the opportunity cost, right? So what's the cost for that time spent by the director doing those mundane things versus like the real thing? Because if you look at being able to eliminate the mundane, then it doesn't just become some pipe dream that we can have a 30-hour work week. It's, whoa, actually, maybe 30 hours could potentially be too much because 50 or 40 of my hours have been spent doing mundane tasks and 8 deep thinking. I don't know because it's unmeasured, but anyway. Then maybe that's another topic for another day. But yeah. Chopi, you know, wrapping it up, what are the foundations of affecting major change, right? For you, how do you, if you're coming in and you're looking at people with existing transformations that kind of maybe stalled, not hitting. So how are you helping them? What are foundations for those change? They can grade themselves or make sure they're going to start a new initiative, right?
I'm going to rattle off some of the things that are generic and then maybe pull back and tell you what I typically do, what is the Chopi touch, so to speak. Foundations to really impact a major change, a major transformation, you need to create a sense of urgency in the entire organization. The climate, the economic climate is not great. AI is coming into the picture. we need to change, we need to adapt, right? So that is an essential urgency to be created in the company. And of course, they're based on data, to your point. Mm-hmm. Understand where your value chain is. Understand what the opportunities that you need to take up, so on and so forth, right? So they're all backed by data. Creating a committee, a guiding coalition, who are made up of influencers, people with power, people that are representing different parts of a company to come together to be champions, so to speak, and infiltrate the, sounds bad word, but basically within the organization, they have enough of an impact to propel this transformation and champion this transformation at all levels. I think that's an essential aspect that needs to be fully carved out. And of course, as I mentioned early on, vision and strategy, you need to have that clearly, consistently across the board. You need to modify that at a BU level, perhaps, because at a CEO level, the changes that you want to see that are at that vision is slightly broader. But me at a BU level may need to take that, yes, but I also need to define my objectives because I am part of tax, for example, versus audit. So I need to adapt some of those changes in the strategy based on the world I live in. Communication, consistently, constantly. I think I cannot say this enough at all levels. And communication that is meaningful, that gives insight, and that's also, and it sounds mundane, but documented. Because times, a lot of people are not listening to a quarterly meeting that you're in or a monthly meeting that you're in. They can go back and look at the notes. So I think it's essential to build that story, both verbally as well as written. Empowering your people, empowering people at all levels, empowering that employee to take risk, and empowering that mid-manager, supervisor to take on and implement that at his or her BU level. And going back to your data, documenting and celebrating those wins, celebrating and acknowledging those milestones that you have targeted that are on your roadmap to help you propel and move forward. Because I think that kind of permeates creates the culture of, yes, we're doing the right thing. Yes, we're taking on risks. Yes, we are innovating. Yes, we are celebrating. I think that's an essential part of what feeds into the culture. And I think that, because culture takes time to change. And I think that's an essential, organically moving that forward. So I think those are pretty much most of the things that I would say should be foundations for it to be a success, for transformation to be a success.
That's awesome. Are you going to write a blog post or something about all this? Because those would be some great points, I think, to what you just said earlier, written down. Like, those are some awesome things. So Shippy, maybe you should just write on a LinkedIn blog post or something on those.
I like that. I think creating a framework, I'm a nerd in that aspect. I document and everything. Yeah. I have a list for everything. You'll hear it from basically everybody I've worked with at home as well. Yeah. With the list for the weekend. So absolutely. I think that's a great idea, Sid.
Yeah. Well, our family is a bunch of nerds too. So we have a whiteboard in the hallway where the kids get anxious if my wife doesn't write down the chores and the checklist for the day. So they were up early this morning. There's, Mom, where's my chores?
But it's always, where are we going today? Where are we going to eat? Which restaurant? Oh. So it's also actually written down on our whiteboard.
Oh, wow. And, yeah. To be fair, it's not that they're so eager to do their chores. They're eager to do their chores so that they get their free time. So they know the goal. They have a clear goal. And they are motivated to do that checklist to get to that goal.
They want to get away from.
Yes.
Or they tackle. Yeah.
Shippy, I really appreciate your time today. What is it for folks that want to connect with you? What is the best way to do that? And where are we going to find you next?
LinkedIn, best way to reach out. Anything you want to talk about regarding digital transformation, regarding the current economic state and how it impacts your industry, related industries, your specific company or your specific business unit, or if you want to talk about upskilling yourself in order to tackle the way the market is running or move on to your next part of your career, LinkedIn is the best way to reach me. And what is next for me? Getting myself more comfortable, more and more comfortable with the progression of the new technologies that are coming in, AI specifically, of course. And because I see a lot of AI within the technical world and the progression of it, but the business aspect of it, building out the business cases, how does it embed into the overall transformation that can happen in a company? How do you embed AI into all of that? I think that is my next step, and which is what I'm working on.
Amazing.
Pleasure, by the way.
Thank you for being a guest today. It was awesome.
Thank you so much, Sid.